This podcast is brought to you by Invoca, the platform that connects your marketing spend to the revenue it drives. In today's complex buying journeys, tracking results across online and offline touchpoints isn't just a challenge, it's critical to your success. Invoca uses AI to connect your campaigns with 100% of the revenue they generate, so you can confidently invest in what works and optimize what doesn't. Join brands like DirecTV and AutoNation and start turning AI-driven insights into revenue growth. Learn more at Invoca.com. Hi, Julia. Thanks so much for joining us on CMO Convo
today. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. So before we get started with a subject I'm really, really excited about today, I'm sure our audience would just love to hear a little bit more about yourself and about your role within your organization and your organization itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Julia Goebel, Chief Marketing Officer of Komodo Health. We are a technology platform company that seeks to bring the evidentiary standard to the new business of healthcare. And what that means is we help a variety of stakeholders in the healthcare systems understand patient journeys at large. We possess the largest view of de-identified patient journeys for the U.S. health system.
That's really, really fascinating. And something like healthcare as well. I'm really, really interested to dig into that with you, like kind of what marketing and what being a CMO looks like.
Absolutely.
In an organization like that, because it's so different from what I'm used to talking to people about, you know, more kind of often more kind of B2B kind of type things. You know, I mean, I guess it is B2B, isn't it? Because you're selling to hospitals, but I'm more like I tend to speak with people who kind of sell to kind of SaaS businesses. Right. And things like that, you know. So I'm really interested to hear with something, especially with like that's as kind of sensitive and obviously close to people's hearts as like kind of healthcare is.
Absolutely.
In particular.
Let's get into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 100%. So yeah.
I've been a B2B marketer for better part of 20 years, and as I continued in my B2B experience, you know, starting first as an analyst in consulting for Accenture, and then working with clients on marketing consulting projects, I found I was drawn to healthcare. I enjoyed lots of aspects of B2B, but there was something that, really drew me to one, an issue or an industry that most of us interact with at some point, whether we're well or not, or we have others that we care for or pulling for if they're in their own health experience. But I found that the interest, the timing of technology entering healthcare in a very big way, whether it was through digitized records, through patient ID check-in, and then of course, much more use of data in a meaningful way. I found more and more interesting and compelling roles in B2B healthcare technology. And so over the last several years as a CMO, what I've enjoyed is uncovering, new areas of insights for healthcare, whether it's areas that allow physicians to more quickly communicate with colleagues around patient communication, whether it's around the credentialing of clinicians across health systems, or currently at Komodo, providing access to insights that allow for better clinical trial recruitment, for better understanding of patient experiences on various therapies, whether RX or MX, and then certainly understanding how therapies are performing for brands like the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting in the topic of healthcare, isn't it, in particular, because I think really getting I think one of the obstacles that people find in healthcare so often is that lack of kind of a holistic view of a patient that is also kind of transferable from person to person.
That's right.
So it's so essential, and I think I can really see how like this kind of technology is kind of really pivotal. With something like this.
Exactly. Whether it's our last best experience as a consumer, and often on the web, it's we interacted with Apple, Amazon, some of the largest brands, social brands, of course. You know, patients have the same experience expectations, and likewise, business users and data scientists have the same expectation. It needs to be easy. There should be an ease at which I access information, even if the information is highly sophisticated.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So we talked a little bit about alignment sort of, you know, in terms of dealing with patients. One of the subjects I wanted to get onto today, because it's kind of a pressing issue with, I think a lot of CMOs mm-hmm. deal with, is kind of alignment within organizations. Yes. And alignment within teams. In particular, I mean, you must have heard this a million times. What's the old bugbear with marketing? The gap between sales and marketing is the thing that we hear about all the time, isn't it? And I'm just wondering, like, you know, what's been your experience with this kind of thing? And how do you kind of ensure that you kind of have that kind of alignment in terms of your strategies mm-hmm. and your insights with the rest of your organization?
Yeah, certainly. So I have had wonderful sales partners and continue to have, but it is a result of working hard at our partnerships and at our relationships. And I like to think of us as siblings. We are all on a leadership team or any sports team. You can choose your metaphor, family even in some culture of some companies. But at the end of the day, we are a business organization. We are in business, whatever that business or that mission may be. And we need to continue to keep the true north in mind. What I mean by that is the revenue organization, the sales organization's objective is to convert enough inquiries to customers and, of course, create customers for life. And anyone can agree, whether marketing or sales, we want to introduce as many inquiries as we can to do so. And so when we mm-hmm. agree on that top line objective, the subsequent objectives are easier. And so what I've found with my sales partners is that when I, you know, begin with understanding, they will lose more than they win. You know, a really good win rate is maybe you're winning 30% of the time, maybe it's another number, but they're going to lose more often than not. Additionally, my sales partners and all of their teams are typically working at risk. They have some of their compensation at risk. They are, you know, compensated for overperformance and, you know, sometimes with underperformance, losing their job. So I think a marketer can always win when they come in with an empathy and an understanding of the business challenges that their selling partners mm-hmm. are facing. The second piece is, and this is because I've worked both in publicly traded and then series A through E companies. When we make the number, things are easier. And that's we as a team. Mm-hmm. When we miss the number, decisions are difficult and you have to make hard choices. And so as a marketing organization, I like to ensure that our team understands when we make the number, we earn the right to do other things. And so we always have a revenue objective in marketing. I own a number from a pipeline contribution perspective. I'm accountable to my sales partner for that contribution. And it's not about credit. It's about how we ensure we invest more in what's working and invest less in what's not. And that math is usually pretty easy. There are some typically bright spots and you invest more in those and you reduce, you know, others. And then, of course, there's a high fidelity. But you have to find alignment with your partner. And, you know, in some cases, this does mean you are friends and colleagues. In some others, it's, you know, there is, you know, a moment in which you agree to work together and be colleagues. But either way, you have to find a way to meet your partner, understand their business objectives, and share how yours align with the big picture.
Yeah, I love that. Such a great answer. Thank you so much for that. So what does it look like then in excuse my ignorance, you know, like I said, this new speaking to someone who sort of leads up marketing in a healthcare organization. What does it look like then in when it's running successfully within Komodo, this relationship between marketing and sales? Like what would you, is it kind of, you know, how do the two work together? How do they click together?
Yeah, sure. So we have you know, both matrixed organizations. You know, my sales partner, our CRO, and I report to the same person. We have ultimately the business objectives that are clearly laid out. And then we task our teams with their own respective portions of that. You know, so within marketing, that's the demand team. And the demand team's number one customer is sales internally. Of course, our customers in the world, but in the general public. But we are accountable to the demand team from a number of perspectives, whether it's KPIs, strategy alignment. And then, you know, of course, we have a very talented product marketing team that is constantly developing in partnership with sales enablement, the resources that allow our sellers to be successful, to communicate the innovation and the roadmap, and to celebrate the new launches as our product team brings more to market. So, you know, really it is in service of revenue. And I'd be remiss if I didn't add, there has been as organizations change and really as marketing has evolved, a swing toward demand at risk of any branding. And I really believe the answer is in the middle. You have to have a balance of brand and demand. Yeah. And I'll add, the way you know that if you don't have enough invested in brand is if you have your sales partners or your sales executives saying, you know, I introduced myself and they didn't know who our company was, or they didn't know about our big product release. And so you always need to have a portion of brand embedded in your strategy, even if it is sharing space, sharing budget with demand.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know what? I've had this conversation on the podcast a lot recently, and I find it really interesting is, you know, I guess that marketing in the past maybe being deemed by some people as more of a cost center, or as something maybe that's very difficult to kind of, everyone has, haven't they? At least something that's like difficult historically to kind of quantify success within marketing or measure success. I think that's really kind of changing with modern technology and things like that, with the kind of data that we have access to now, the kind of
analytics. And I would say it has changed.
That we have.
The world has changed in that regard.
Yeah,
yeah. Marketing is highly measurable. 100%, yeah. And, you know, it was measurable 15 years ago. And so the advantaged marketers are the ones who have used the resources and data available to them to tell the story about what marketing is delivering. And so, again, 15 years ago, it was traffic to the website, and then social emerged, and it was likes and engagement. But now we know enough from a digital perspective how many of our target accounts engaged with our marketing assets, whether it is visited our site because we have compliant tracking, cookie tracking, right? Did they engage in any of our information? That can be tracked. How many of our accounts and then members of that decision team, that buying team, engaged with a variety of market information? We know that there is a myriad of data points. And so a marketer who claims marketing isn't measurable is, you know, maybe due for a brush up or, you know.
I like how you said that so politely.
And I will say marketers know this. And so the marketer's dilemma is then, what is the level of information I should surface? So I mentioned likes. Mm-hmm. I never bring that into a boardroom, but I do bring pipeline contribution and a variety of channels that informed new opportunity creation and which channels informed closed won revenue. Because that's how I'm allocating my investment based on what I've observed, not only makes it into pipeline to later proposal stages and to closed one. I also highlight, how we're using revenue data, customer feedback, and win-loss to affect our overall strategy. So, you know, there are data points you bring into the boardroom. There are data points you keep, within your team, but that you monitor and measure. And there's wonderful resources out there, including with the CMO Alliance on measurement.
Thank you so much. Yeah. So that's really great. So let's talk then about the role of leadership then. Like going back to the kind of the topic again of kind of alignment, what do you see the CMO's role as in facilitating this, in facilitating that role, that kind of alignment between teams? What is a good CMO doing, I guess, in order to kind of bring everyone in line with kind of this vision that you've described?
Sure. You know, when in any role at this level, the C is as important as the M. And the same is true of my product officer counterparts or revenue officer counterparts, financial officer. We are certainly skilled and have advanced in our marketing acumen, but we are also chief in that we are executives accountable to the overall team, overall leadership team, and our board, our stakeholders. And sometimes that's a publicly held shareholder. Sometimes it's a privately held. But we have to remember, there's a concept that Patrick Lencioni, management writer and consultant, describes as the first team. With my leadership, my LT partners, we are a first team. We need to be aligned so that our teams can then feel that alignment. And there are times where you need to debate, discuss, but we have to agree and commit and move on. And so that is one of the ways we at Komodo think about it. Our LT is intended to be tight, to be aligned. Sure, we have disagreements, debates, but we all agree and commit to move forward, because every employee at any company can recall when they were aware of leadership disagreements. They maybe saw fighting, discomfort. It's not great for employees. So while we certainly have debate, and sometimes we have it in discussions and multi-level meetings, of course, but you have to agree and commit. That's one thing I believe. One, your first team, to agree and commit. And then I think the third is you need to have regular touch base and even a personal connection to the extent you can with all of your colleagues. Now, I happen to be speaking to you from Chicago, but we have team members across the US, in France, in Costa Rica, across the world, in India, Kuala Lumpur, and so forth. But you can make points to get to know each other, have, whether it's by Zoom or other ways. And so once you can forge a personal connection, you can have the space to bring the difficult questions forward. It is hard to have a difficult discussion if you don't know enough about your business partner. If you haven't had an opportunity to get to know them at all, it's worth doing, and it's time invested that pays dividends.
Yeah, 100%.
So one way I do that is I ensure I have regular connects with my leadership colleagues, one-to-ones, is a foundational element that I think any CMO should have in their wheelhouse.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it helps as well, doesn't it, as a CMO to be, even if you're coming from the marketing sphere, to be aware of other roles, exactly what the job entails and what their challenges are all the time as well. I think obviously that helps with any marketer, but especially for someone in a leadership role, I would think that, if you can understand the daily challenges of people that you're working with across teams, then that only fosters that kind of empathy, doesn't it? And encourages it, I think, big time. Great. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. So let's move on to the second phase then. I really want to ask you about AI. First of all, can I just get your general kind of thoughts then? I think it was quite a divisive issue initially, and now I think it's kind of becoming one of those things where people, like any kind of technological innovation, there's always the fear at first. Sure. And then I think people start to get excited a little bit after that. And I think we're kind of in the excitement phase with AI actually now. People are starting to think like, wow, this is what it can actually do, because people are seeing the results. And I'm just wondering about yourself, was there ever any kind of skepticism there, or have you always been open to it? Are you enjoying the benefits of it now? What's it been like with you?
Yeah, I'm excited actually. I would definitely call myself one of the excited participants. And there's some areas in which, I hope we would be considered leading. It's not unlike, years ago when spell check was added to email, you would think, why wouldn't I put that on my email? I just want the boost to be able to be assisted. Again, many years later, there are tools that exist to help us outsource, the lowest 10% of work, whether it's automation in our email client, whether it's any number of everyday tools that we do happen all the time. And then, of course, ChatGPT's dawning and really coming to the consumer market over, a year and a half to 2 years ago is really what has prompted this latest wave of AI. I follow an investment firm that only expressly invests in AI-related growth companies, which I find really fascinating. But specifically within marketing, marketers have an opportunity to lead from the front. There's a number of tools in a number of software solutions that are out there. And, the cloud of AI-related marketing tools continues to expand. The cloud of options is out there. But there's some basic and then more advanced ways to begin. So one is email automation. There's easy and affordable to very sophisticated tools that allow marketing automation to occur at scale. And it's always been assisted by ML, but now there's more AI features available to help you automate. Another area is sales development, where sales development cadences can be automated with always human oversight to help. And then I think a lot about writing in a brand voice. There are wonderful writing tools that allow content marketing teams to write in a brand voice. Or if you acquire a company, to help convert from one brand voice to another, now that a new software solution is part of your portfolio, you need that acquired software suite to have blog post content, reworded. 100 blog posts would be quite a lot for a content marketer to do over a period of time. But if you have an AI tool like Writer or Jasper take the first pass, you're reducing a lot of the obvious work, and allows your content writer or your content marketer, your human, to take a more editor view versus a writing view. So there's lots of time savings. I think all of us need to adopt and embrace the time savings that AI can bring us. And you always want to have the intersection of AI and humanity to help ensure that the right decisions are being made. The really common example in healthcare, and I have a lot of admiration for the person who said this, is, we can accept that it's 95% correct, but is 5% fatalities acceptable? Probably not. But if 95% can be considered as very clear, very clear direction, this is the course of action to be taken for 95% of cases, then you only have 5% to carefully review as a human. So I think there's some real opportunities as AI becomes more adopted, outside business software, but into decision support for clinicians and for healthcare, to assist in helping them do their best work, because we'll never not need humans in healthcare.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. So what do you see then, if you could highlight then what you think the most pivotal use of AI so far in your work, what has that been? What has been the most transformative aspect would you highlight? And could you maybe, if you can, name a specific kind of example of something that you've done where you've seen like, wow, like this has really changed the way that I used to do this. This used to take loads of time. Is there anything that you can think of in particular?
Yeah. I think, data joining is one that's pretty common. Ability to shortcut the access to insights, at least in marketing, I find has been beneficial. Now, in our data science teams across Komodo, that has been the business as usual for a long time. But as we adopt more sophisticated data strategies in marketing, it's been really exciting to think about where we can shorten the time to insights, to decision making, and so forth. So that's one. I mentioned a moment ago, tools that are to help enrich content or to shorten the time to great content creation. As SEO changes, as the search engines evolve, and whether it's Google's Gemini or others, they will continue to rely on original content. So I very much believe in original content as an important pillar of every marketing strategy, of every marketer's portfolio. You need to have original content. Now, you might have assistance from AI to do so, but publishing original content is critical and to be seen as a domain that is trusted and valuable by search engines. The way that keyword advertising and bidding has evolved is going to continue to evolve with the help of AI agents. And so, whether it is ensuring that your content is searchable and trusted, and again, published multitudes, that will help marketers continue to be found, for their companies to be seen as authorities, and to, again, make the most of the ever-shrinking marketing dollar, the advantage marketers who understand these aspects of digital strategies will be benefiting.
Great. Yeah, I think he put it really, really well, especially like the bit about original content. I think in a way, you know, what AI has necessitated really is for human beings to kind of, you know, to provide as much authentic content as they possibly can. I think, you know, if anything, like it's just put, it's really like it's kind of like you said, it's taken the weight off with the kind of things that the machines can do as well as humans, and mm-hmm. made it so that we have more time to think about the creative things, hasn't it? That only
Absolutely.
We can do.
Absolutely. It's an assistant. Let's use it. Let's embrace it.
Yeah, a tool. It's a tool, isn't it? You know, like anything. I think that's a really great way of thinking about it. So let's go back then. Let's take the conversation full circle. We started talking about alignment. And I want to know, how can AI assist in this, do you think? Like, how can it ensure that companies, you know, are working closely aligned, really efficiently, there's good communication? How do you see AI assisting in that regard?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of ways. You know, many of the bespoke AI tools or the, you know, the off-the-shelf AI tools offer opportunities to aggregate and summarize information. You know, there's a very common, you know, example that we see across sales and marketing. It's the use of you know, tools that allow sifting through information through notes, whether it's in your CRM, such as Salesforce, or it's in the use of calls and mining calls for insights, you know, for keywords, for sentiment analysis, whether positive or negative. You know, in customer service applications, for the better part of 10 plus years, sentiment analysis has been available to identify at large the tone or manner of hundreds of thousands of calls, hundreds of thousands of emails, and that sentiment analysis you know, can help inform customer satisfaction, net promoter, to get a sense of areas to penetrate and to further examine, perhaps even risk, where risk may exist, or customer, just simply unhappy customers is enough of a reason to investigate. So I think that area of customer service AI will continue to evolve, you know, within knowledge banks and sharing of information. There's additional ways to help summarize and reduce the time to understanding. And we are all competing for time as we, you know, think about how to manage our days, manage our times. And those who can understand and take advantage of tools that, you know, shorten the time to insights and allow them to move from data to information to, you know, to understanding are going to be better positioned.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's a great way of saying it. I think that, yeah, what really intrigues me in particular is that ability for AI to kind of monitor performance, especially in the role of sales and things like that. It's a kind of, yeah, I think those kind of calls that were kind of closed boxes at one time, you know, that ability for it is to essentially go by the framework that your company's provided and then highlight the things within the conversation that could have gone better, what could have done, you know, it's allowing people essentially in theory to coach themselves, which I think, you know, I mean, obviously every person, you know, whether you're in marketing, you're in sales, you're in product, whatever you're in, you need a, everyone needs a mentor. But I think it, you know, I think in the meantime, in the interim between those spaces, like it's great to be able to help yourself and have the tools to coach yourself all the time and try and be, you know, learning. Self-learning is so important. So, you know, learning and development. So I think that those tools, especially AI, I think there's amazing potential.
Yeah, and there's
there.
Even, there's lots of opportunities, even from self-coaching, because your comment inspired me. You know, I use a tool called Grammarly. It's pretty common. And one of my favorite features is that it gives me periodic feedback. Your tone is confident, supportive, enthusiastic. But then sometimes it's direct, terse, you know, so I always want to be mindful of how am I showing up today? And so across, you know, I had a number of insane pages that I had been reading or editing. And while I appreciated the kudos on vocabulary, I think I was more excited that the tone was positive, supporting, and confident. So, so I think there's lots of tools, and we're only seeing the beginning. And so marketers jump in with both feet. It's really, it's time for us. And this is an opportunity for marketers to lead among our peers, among our colleagues.
Yeah, and ChatGPT, even on its own, you know, is really good as well. I've used it a few times to kind of match it to a brand tone. it's really good at doing that as well. Like if you, so you could write out the copy that you wanted yourself, then put it through ChatGPT and say, look, this is our tone. This is how we want to appear. And you could provide it even with an example of, you know,
we're seeing Apple and Microsoft advertise this in the United States. And that type of improve my email, make me sound professional is in, and there's some, there's some really lovely comic ads about this. I think there's, you know, it's becoming attainable at the consumer level. Let's, you know, ensure that business professionals are taking advantage as well.
Yeah, great. So finally, I'm going to draw this to a close now. I just wanted to ask you very quickly about perhaps some ethical concerns. What do you see as the main ethical concerns, and, you know, how can we circumvent them? How can we avoid them? How can we combat them? Because they are, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's moving so quickly. And there have been a couple of scandals.
Well, certainly.
And like you were talking before,
we have to be careful. I mean, we have to be eyes open. You know, there's examples of, you know, hallucinations. You know, I think there was a famous, a relatively well-known, you know, New York Times article in which the writer engaged with the GPT, and it almost started to show some human sentiments, and that, you know, those are maybe a little bit more extreme. And obviously that reporter was, you know, pressing the limits. But back to your question, I mean, I actually have a book on my desk called Responsible AI, How to Implement an Ethical Approach in Your Organization. You know, we have to keep ethics at our heart. And that's even more so in a HIPAA compliant healthcare compliant organization. You know, we take risk management very seriously. And so I'll give you an example there. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, call recording, first of all, is mandated. Reporting is mandated. You need to disclose, and the state laws vary, but you need to disclose if you are recording a meeting to the participants. It is a requirement in the state I live in, and it's a requirement across most of the United States. And so that comes back to the call mining and call sentiment discussion. You know, we have customers who are working with, you know, secure and important business strategies that they don't want recorded. And so we are very cautious and compliant about the ways that we use tools like that. We also want to ensure that, especially in healthcare and in healthcare AI, and nowhere is there a larger topic about healthcare AI than in the provider space, the health system, you know, how to implement ethically. You know, it's an organization can define its ethics requirements. It can define and have an AI governance council. You know, these are some of the ways that, again, marketing has an opportunity to lead, is to help facilitate discussions like these. You know, we have business partners in all of our areas who are early adopters and others who are coming to the table. But it's important that an organization has a governance plan and a approach to ensuring compliance with the state and national regulations, as well as, you know, perhaps even ahead of the regulations, because we know that there are times when industry leads government. So we want to be mindful of that.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, final question then. What do you see then in the future? Like, how do you see the CMO role evolving? What do you think the CMO of 10 years time, 20 years time?
Ooh, I love this question. You know, it's fascinating to think about where it may be in 10 to 20 years. And, you know, certainly it will be a requirement to have an understanding of technology to be able to be what I consider a T-shaped marketer, where you have a general understanding and body of knowledge, but you are deep in one or two areas of strength. Another version is the pie-shaped marketer, where you have, you know, the pie symbol, where you have pillars of strength. That will be true no matter what, but marketers really need to be holding their own from a KPI, a data and financial perspective. No time like now, and I would, I assume we'll continue to be that way. If we follow, we will be left behind. We need to stay at the forefront and even leading to our peers and to our colleagues. You know, styles and manners may vary, but understanding and being able to relate to your colleagues, to meet them where they are, for them to meet you where you are, and forge alliances, work together. I feel that those will always be true. Now, the technology will vary, and I may no longer have a mouse. I may simply move my eyes around and decide how to navigate, or information may be prompted to me. Those types of innovations are already on the fore, but the way that buyers will consume information is going to evolve more rapidly than we can possibly imagine. And so there's no time like the present to get started and get going.
That's a great positive message to end on. Thanks so much, Julia, for your time.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much. It was nice visiting with you today.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of CMO Convo. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a rating and review on your preferred platform. Don't forget to tune in next week for another insightful conversation with the leading CMO.